Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show 123. It is, what is it? It's about day one of our confinement, maybe day three. It is March 16th, 2020, the day before St. Patrick's Day. Got to see if they have any corned beef and cabbage out in the store. They were pretty well stocked here in Brooklyn yesterday. I am in the Brooklyn bunker once again. I'm going to be here for a while, though I suppose a trip to Saratoga could happen at some point. Here to talk about everything going on in the world and the world of racing in particular. And to do that with me, a man who does not have 17,000 tubes of sanitizer, but he did just have a shop at his local grocery store. He's the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, my friend?
What's going on, PTF? Yeah, I went to the store, got some cheese, chicken, and wine, which I felt like was all I really needed.
You're covering all the basic food groups there. Were you able? Was the beer place open? Were you able to get a little bit of that electric jellyfish to lay in?
It didn't look like it was from a distance, so I didn't bother going that direction. You know, if I got to swing back out for a second, but I grabbed a couple of other things I think that could hold me over. As long as the Xbox is working, I'll be in business.
I know you have your fancy new Xbox headset on. You sent me the picture, which you made me promise not to post, and I will obey that. But it's quite a look you've got going there.
Oh man, it's like, you know, look, this hair that I have, it requires some care, and and since I haven't been leaving the house, it's just it's what you would imagine it looks like. It's a cross probably between like Booker T. Washington and our boy Al Sharpton, maybe mixed in with a little bit of Don King, somewhere along those lines.
I was going to go straight up Don King based on what I saw, but less coiffed somehow. But not as much gray. Oh my goodness. So how much racing did you watch? How much were you participating? You talked about how you might just be an observer this weekend to get the, you know, adjusted to this strange new reality that we're in. And I know you had Austin, and obviously the spending time with him, the priority, but what'd you end up doing?
Played the late pick five yesterday or 2 days ago at Oaklawn, and decided at the last minute to unclick the 2A, the A with 2B ticket. Oh. That ticket, that was a winner that paid $26,000.
Oh.
And I would have had the 2B, but I only played the 1B.
How much how much money did that represent? This is a great question.
$160, I think.
And how much was the ticket as it was? Like by percentage of the ticket, how much was that? I'm trying to decide.
I played partners with a friend. I think our total ticket was like 900, 800,000, something like that.
Gotcha.
So in the grand scheme of things, hindsight being 2020, it wasn't the smartest thing. No. And then yesterday we played like a really small version, and we were alive in the last of the horse that ran second and got beat. But it wasn't coming back good anyways. It was all favorites. So those were my involvements.
That's always so hard, those decisions. But I think that's right. When you look at the ticket that you didn't play as a percentage of the total play, you know, you get so much more coverage with those 2B tickets. And I know we've talked about this a little bit on the Stronach show, and we actually had a great comment come in. I doubt I'm going to have the bandwidth to do this, but I put it out there to a listener who might be interested. And this is something we should probably talk about on the Stronach show, to pay attention to and you know, for this to mean anything, it's going to have to play out over a lot of time. But let me know what you think of this idea. What if we were to keep track of not just the ROI on the investments we make on the Stronach show, but to look at what the difference would be in ROI terms of making the investments in the 2B tickets versus the days that we don't do that? There's some logistics here. This would be very much appreciated if anybody wants to step up and take this project on. But don't you think if you did that for long enough, you might learn something? Or do you feel like there's just too much randomness and one big number can like the one that you didn't have there can skew the experiment too much?
From the short term, yeah, I think it could be skewed. But for the long term, I think it's a winning idea.
Yeah. And if anybody out there is interested in a project, I know we have had some folks come out of the woodwork and say, hey, do you need any more content on the website? I've got some time on my hands and I want to do some writing. Absolutely. We're not going to publish just anything, but if you're somebody who has some ideas and is looking to get them out there in the world, I think that's one thing we can do right now is try to be a little bit more of a horse racing community around the blog and get some conversations going in comments and posting some new voices and doing these things, because every single comment we got, and there were probably about 20 of them, everybody wants at least as much content as we're doing already. And then we had some, and I love this, I don't know that we'll get to it, but we did have some specific requests like, hey, do something about the Sam Houston on Tuesdays. And these, like, people want the distraction, which only makes sense. I guess I just wanted to make sure, but thanks to everybody who wrote in. And if you want to participate, again, in the form of writing something, you know, send me a writing sample through the blog, and you know, maybe I can invite you to post and we can get some more stuff going and keep the requests coming in. We did have a couple of questions that we'll get to at some point in this show as well. But I think we should start off talking about the actual racing over the weekend. I made some token plays and was pretty happy with the way they turned out. We ended up with some to me what were overlaid prices on some of the horses we talked about last week, including CC and Field Pass. But I mean, CC at 4-1, I thought was pretty generous. And we also have the stop me if you've heard this one question, JK. Stop me if you've heard this one, Bob Baffert. What an incredibly strong hand for this year's Derby, with not just Nadal showing what I thought was an extraordinary performance, but also Charlotte running off the screen and putting up a crazy 106 buyer speed figure. Which one were you more impressed by?
Well, from a figure standpoint, you have to say you're more impressed with Charlotte based on the figure. But looking at the pace figures of Nadal's race, and understanding that this entire thing with pace figures and final figures and all the different tools that we all use from a handicapping standpoint, the base of it is energy distribution. How much energy was used? When was it used? How was it used? And how does it help you paint a picture of a horse's ability and talent and athleticism?
Well put.
And if you look at it that way, Nadal exerted a lot of energy at the first and early part of the race and still had a great final time, a great final figure. So there's a possibility that when stretching out and when having the ability to maybe not use as much energy early, he's going to still finish like a good horse that he clearly is, and he could be dangerous. So I'm not going to pick between the two of them yet on who would be my favorite, but it is definitely one of them to win the Kentucky Derby. That's my first observation.
All right. As somebody who already has a live bet on Tis the Law, you know, I'm hoping you're not right, but I certainly get where you're coming from.
To me, it's not even close. To me, it's not even close. Those two, from a tactical standpoint, have a huge, huge edge on a horse that can't seem to find himself in a race that doesn't involve him in trouble.
Well, those were rider decisions, though, don't we think? I mean, that's the way that you framed it in the past.
I think that you don't know yet. I think that there was definitely rider decision involved in it. But I also think that when you have a horse that sometimes you can have a horse that his style and his ability increases the opportunity to get him into a bad trip.
I agree with that. I just don't see that from Tis the Law. Like I said, to me, these were very clearly decisions that were made to hold the horse back. I mean, to quote Double R when he was on, I don't know how we got to talking about Tis the Law, but somehow we did, and he said something to the effect of, and I don't necessarily, this is overly harsh, but the rider trying to get him beat, I certainly don't think that's accurate. But the fact that he overcame those situations, and again, at the time, I thought maybe they were meant to be tactical and teach the horse something. Subsequent stories we're hearing about the rider getting switched suggest that maybe that was optimistic on my part. But anyway, I don't think we've seen the best of him. But I apologize for selfishly bringing that to my own topic that I wanted to discuss.
No, you're fine. He's going to have to run down. He is going to be behind three freaky horses, and good luck to him in passing all three of them. He's going to have to pass Authentic, who we saw last week, who's undefeated and clearly freaky.
Looked amazing.
He's going to have to pass Nadal, who's clearly freaky, and who's only going to get better. As a big horse, you got to think he's only going to get better, get more fit, and then he's got to. Oh, and then by the way, he's got to pass this freaky thing in Charlatan, who's run two triple digit buyers to start his career. Yeah, I mean, good luck.
I would love to be able to compare. The only figures we have access to that try to put the pace into the number are the time form U.S. numbers. They put the pace into the overall number. We do know that Nadal finished with a raw 114 upgraded to a 120. I haven't seen what happened with Charlatan. We know the buyer was a 106. That would be, you'd expect that to be 124, 126 on the Timeform US scale. But I don't know. I'm really not sure what the pace situation. I mean, you wouldn't think that to run that fast, he must have been running honest. I wonder if Craig will end up giving him any upgrades. I think on the time form figures, he'll probably come out faster, Charlatan, almost definitely, I'd say. But still, to see a horse do what Nadal did, those fractions obviously coded red, but also just the fact that, yes, he was a much shorter price than the other speed horses, but you picked American Theorem. This was not, despite the giant price on the board, this was no-hoper. And the fact that the other two speeds end up last and second to last, while Nadal holds on through all of that to be first at the wire. I mean, if you made me say, which one am I more excited about right now? Here's how I'll hedge. You punted the question entirely. I'll just sit on the fence and pick a splinter out of my behind. If the Derby were as scheduled, first Saturday in May, I think I would say Nadal has an edge. With the Derby, very likely, just rumors at this point. Bob Baffert mentioned that in the post-race interview from Charlatan, and then there's subsequently just been some whispers that I've heard. It's sounding like first Saturday in September is the likely date. I expect we'll hear something from Churchill about this in hopefully the next week or two. I don't know. Maybe that's unrealistic. I sure hope that's the case. That changes it a little to me because it makes me think that Charlatan, if he doesn't have to rush getting the seasoning and can develop naturally to potentially peak for that date, that might be a better situation than Nadal. You mentioned the idea of the big horse and how you think there's a good chance he'll only get better. I do worry that having the date further out also just means there's more opportunity for a complication to come up somewhere along the line here and for him to maybe have to miss some time, at which, so if it was first Saturday in May, give me Nadal. First Saturday in September, give me Charlatan. Who do you think it benefits or hurts if and when, at this point, this Derby date gets moved?
Well, so I have a couple of things. First of all, I think, and I'll answer that question. I think the one thing you can say about Nadal to consider, and go ahead and take a look at the races, there's a chance that the inside ended up being pretty good on Saturday at Oaklawn with the way the racetrack was playing.
Surprising, so, but interesting.
Keep an eye on that. Well, just with the rain and, a lot of times those things can kind of change and flip. And that monster performance and how you mentioned the other good horses that were involved in the speed finishing last, it's a question you at least have to ask yourself.
Yeah, fair.
And if the answer is no, then he's a freak. If the answer is yes, then maybe temper your enthusiasm about that performance. And we won't know that until those horses start running back. So keep an eye on the rail from that day.
Have you spent any time with the charts? Have you spent any time looking at the charts? I mean, it would be tedious to go through it now, but maybe that's something we could look at between now and the next show, or somebody, if folks have opinions about, let us know what you think about that. It's a very important question.
Well, a couple of things. First off, what else are we going to do? And two, I wouldn't look at the charts.
If you have the time, you watch the tape. I was thinking we could almost fake it on the fly and just look at how many horses, have the Equibase down at the rail comments, just to do a little quick and dirty.
And then the other thing is, I mean, look, I don't have any information. except for the information that the rest of the United States has. The Derby's not going to be run on the first Saturday in May. I mean, the CDC just recommended less than 50 people in a situation. There's no way a publicly traded company is going to take that risk of going against what the CDC says. No shot.
Well, so it would be with no audience. The idea would be you'd run it with, I mean, that's what I said on the last show, is I thought it would be best for racing if they went ahead and ran it with no crowd. It just,
I wish
short,
they would. It
doesn't
sounds like they have no interest in that, right?
Yeah, it doesn't. That's one of the, just, again, none of this is official. It's just, you know, we're in this crazy, some of these comments I'm making on the show in the past, I might've said, oh, it's really just gossip. I shouldn't be speculating, but you know what? The heck with it. We're just going to say what we're hearing, but I will say very admittedly, none of this information is reliable. It's just, this is just what we're hearing.
And then one thing I will say, let me answer your question. And then I think we can pivot to a pretty interesting conversation that I started yesterday on Twitter. I don't know. I guess I think no matter how you look at it, the time is going to help all of these animals, right? I think that we all understand why the Derby is so exciting is because they're 3-year-olds going a pretty far distance at a young age. And that's what kind of lets the cream rise to the top. So I think that by it being later, it's only going to help all of them. Authentic, Nadal, Tis the Law, all of them. It's going to help all of them. So who is it going to help more? Who do I want if it's the Saturday in May? I don't know. I really don't. I'd be making something up just to say I made it up. And so that's my answer to that.
I mean, it certainly brings up that some late develop. It would certainly have to help horses who are late developers who wouldn't have a shot of. Well, here's another one. This is interesting. I was going to say who wouldn't have a shot of making it in the Derby if it was the first Saturday of May, but what happens to the point system in that case? And how does that affect things? I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, and what do you do if you have if you have a 3-year-old right now, let's say you've got a horse like Sol Volante, right? And racing kind of gets shut down. Do you train them? Do you shut them down? Do you give them 2 months to kind of just mature and be a horse? And then you bring them back to the track in June to get them ready for I disagree with you about the first Saturday in September, but I mean, what do you do? So it's going to be really interesting to see what people do.
What do you mean you disagree about the first Saturday in September?
I don't think that would be the date. I think if they were going to move it, I don't think that would be the day, because that's when, I mean, if we're racing, I don't think the Derby wants to go up against Saratoga.
I mean, the Derby, they'd just be the boss of whomever, of whenever they run. I mean, I don't think they care about who they go up against.
But if they're going to wait till the first Saturday in September, let's just go ahead and wait till the next week when Saratoga's closed. I tweeted last night that my choice would be in October, which would be, I think it's 5 weeks after, 4 weeks after the Travers and 6 weeks before the Breeders' Cup.
The Breeders' Cup Derby lives.
There it is, right? There it is.
Heavy sarcasm, folks. Heavy sarcasm.
Yeah, of course. That's where I thought it should land, right?
I wasn't saying it should. I was saying what I'd heard. I wasn't offering any endorsement or is one way or the other. I was just saying passing along some racetrack gossip. That's all I was doing with that.
That would be a fun new Triple Crown, though, wouldn't it? No offense to our friends at the Preakness or at the Belmont, but it would be kind of an interesting for a one-off for 1 year to have the Haskell, Travers, and Kentucky Derby. I mean, it'd be at least interesting for 1 year.
It'd be
insane,
but very interesting. Interesting is a good word for it. We already know how hard the test is just to win. Just to do Haskell Travers is such a tough thing. Theoretically, a little bit easier now with the extra week in between, but still not an easy one by any stretch of the imagination. And you throw the Derby in at the end. What would you think about the points? I mean, I imagine they're just going to freeze the points. But, you know.
Yeah, I think they would freeze, but it would also be in racing's interest if, for the grand scheme of the entire landscape for Churchill to add some points races. You know, you could add a race like, I think it'd be cool to give the Belmont Derby points, right? So you can get some of those turf horses coming back to the dirt. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of fun races throughout the year that they could add into there. You know, the Lexington obviously becomes like a big race now that it's kind of been forgotten because it's only 2 weeks out. There's a lot of cool stuff you could do, I think.
Is it fair to change that midstream, though? I mean, I know the way that these horses have been campaigned up to this point, I feel like has been predicated on what the Derby point system is. It feels weird to add chances for horses to qualify. I feel like the horses who competed in the preps as scheduled should have a big advantage in terms of the composition of the Derby field whenever the race takes place.
No, that's true. I don't disagree with you, but obviously we talked about this off air. Fairness is kind of out the window for a couple of weeks.
You know, well, like what that was a very different conversation we were having, but
you know what I'm saying though. Like it's I think you just have to kind of take a deep breath and do what's best. I mean, it's not fair that my buddy Dom Civitas arguably has the best filly, 3-year-old filly in the country, and a once in a lifetime opportunity to have a favorite in the Kentucky Oaks and Venetian Harbor. And the Kentucky Oaks is probably not going to be run on the day in which they plan this entire campaign around her. Right. It's just like the hand we were dealt. Now let's try to do what we can. I wouldn't be mad either way. I understand your point. I don't disagree with it.
We'll see what happens. And of course there's so many other questions about races like the Oaks and all the other stakes on Oaks and Derby undercards. I mean, would they do what you would think if racing is running, they would be doing something those days. What do you think the chances are racing is going to be able to continue? I feel like we were optimistic on the last show about racing's ability to continue. And we mentioned the possibility of, God forbid, you know, the jockey gets sick or something. Is that going to change everything? Subsequently, there's this talk and it's not clear on what's actually going to be going on with the Laurel Park, but the potentially a government mandated shutdown of even the racing behind closed doors, which I thought you made an excellent point, JK, might just be a misunderstanding somehow from the governor's office. Well, it wouldn't be the first time politicians got confused looking at our sport, but I don't know. I guess I feel much more nervous now than I did the last time we spoke on air about the chance of racing really continuing unabated. But I don't know. I just don't know. What do you have a prediction? I mean, are we going to see racing at Keeneland for 3 weeks? Maybe that's the best way to ask it.
Look, I mean, I hope so. I'm just a little bit concerned, obviously, about what's going to happen. I do think, I'm not a scientist or I know what everyone else knows. I think that if I'm handicapping the situation, I would imagine now with the increase in testing, there's going to be an increase in diagnosis, which means that now it's going to look worse before it looks better. And I worry that in that moment when it looks worse, there's going to be a shutdown of everything. And I'm not opposed to that by any means. Like, let's do what's best for everyone. You know, my father is extremely at risk. If he gets this, it ain't going to be good. He's got it. So I understand that, like, we got to do what we can do. I'm not knocking that. Now, as a sports fan and as a racing fan, I'm hoping that we can find a way to safely keep racing going. My concern, I think if you look at what's happened, I heard from a friend in Lexington from Kentucky, that the governor just closed all restaurants and bars. New York has closed all restaurants and bars unless you can take out. And so it feels like if they do what Kentucky did, racing's going to close down. You're closing those places where people are going to be and keeping the workers safe. If you do what they did in New York, there's a possibility that the workers can still be there in a small amount and still put on an event or cook a food. You know what I mean? So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm concerned that it won't be there. As far as I know, though, I'm scheduled to do 15 hours of America's Day at the Races on FS1 this weekend. So, you know, hopefully that we can keep that around. That'd be a lot of fun.
Let's hope that it can work out. I mean, the fact that the sport is played outdoors, it would seem like the changing room, you know, the jocks room, you'd like to think that there could be safety precautions that would keep it from being any different than being with a gathering of your family members. I mean, I know it's closer quarters than that, but I mean, maybe there's precautions that can be taken. I'm just going to stick with being cautiously optimistic. From a business point of view, of course, it's scary to think of racing getting shut down for us. I mean, our jobs, if racing can continue, our jobs can continue more or less unabated as well. So it would be a huge win for us. I will make the one, just to piggyback off the points you were making about the importance of the social distancing and how difficult this is. And it is, make no mistake, it's difficult and it's unfair. And I think of, you know, I have loads of friends in the service industry who are in deep, deep water. And I feel I feel terribly for them. But, you know, I really think the best analogy about it I've heard is that there's been other generations of Americans who, for the safety of their country, were asked to go overseas and fight wars. And we're asked to figure out another way to support ourselves for a couple of what will hopefully end up being a couple of months, and or figure out how to work at home and sit inside and watch Netflix. So, and still for the moment, be able to watch racing. So in the sacrifice department, this isn't even close to what others have had to do for the safety of our country. And I, you know, as I said on the show the other day, I mean, you look at the estimates of what doing this, what this can mean in terms of lives saved. And we're talking about a million conservatively, people like your father, people like my mom, who are in at-risk categories. And it's just something I feel very strongly about, like you just said, JK, going on in support of, as much as we understand how, you know, forget having your horse have to run in a stake race a couple months after they were supposed to. I mean, that's absolutely nothing. We're talking about people who have, you know, their livelihoods at stake, and it's not going to be easy. But it's, I mean, I just think it's as simple as this. It's got to be done. Let's move on to the Beholder Mile. JK alluded to this before. CC getting the job done. 100 buyer speed figure. Cashes some bets for folks. I did hear from Kim Weir. We had a few donations come in over the weekend. I have a feeling folks might have cast on some of our ideas from the last show. What did you think of CC?
Well, I my initial thought was I was so happy for Michael McCarthy. Obviously, he had big plans for her last year, and she had to go to the farm after her performance in the Acorn. Then she comes back with a big race, and then she gets the grade one and gets the big win out there. That was my first thought. The second thought was I was very happy that we talked about her on the show. I was happy that I gave the exact out on Sportsline.
Nice.
I was mad that I was distracted and literally turned on my account, my RTN account, and logged in to watch the race, wondering how many minutes to post. The time can throw me off sometimes. And it was 1 minute to post, so I didn't actually bet it.
Okay.
That was my second thought. And then my third thought was, a couple hours before that, I saw Serengeti Empress absolutely romp. And I thought to myself, oh my God, who is going to beat this girl? And then now, CeCe comes back into the picture, and hopefully, hopefully, if there's a travel ban, they'll still let her get on the plane to go to the Apple Blossom to try to defend my honor here.
I think you're in deep water. That was the next race I wanted to talk about. Serengeti Empress recording the 101 buyer speed figure in the slop at Oaklawn. You've been very lucky to dodge the bullet, this bet you made that she wouldn't win another grade one. And I think you should try one more time to get Burnick on the phone and see if you can buy him out of this bet, JK. You're in trouble.
Oh, no. I texted him after the race. I said, because Burnick originally thought that it was just for a year. So he called me not too long ago and said, hey, what's your bank stuff? I'll send you the money. And I was like, and I was like, no, it's a lifetime. He's like, oh, okay, cool.
You must have had lifetime. An angel and devil on your shoulder in that moment. right then and there. I'm impressed that you went with the angel as opposed to the devil. You're a good man, JK. It's not true what they say about you.
Right after the race, I texted him. I said, friendly reminder, grade one, LOL. and he said, I've had a good opinion and lost bets before, but this one would piss me off. I told him, I understand. I deserve to lose this wager because she's run three grade one winning races and has not won a grade one. Her test was a grade one winning. This performance, I think, was probably good enough to win a grade one. And then also her performance in the Acorn was grade one winning. So I've been very fortunate.
That was my list of races, honestly, I wanted to talk about. Not too much need to crow anymore about Field Pass. A 90 buyer in the synth. Definitely a horse to keep an eye on for, but I mean, you know, Belmont Derby as opposed to Kentucky Derby, right?
Well, you know, you never know with Maker. I don't think so. I mean, I think they would probably, you know, I think they'll probably try. I think, but if you're talking about when do I want to wager on that horse? Yes, I would think that the next time to wager on him would be Belmont Derby. But, you know, he ran well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's a good horse and wanted a rock solid price there at Turfway Park, and one to keep an eye on. Maker also running third in that spot with Invader, the heavy favorite, running second. We'll see where all those horses turn up. With so much money out there on the turf for three-year-olds these days, I think there's a logic to not. I mean, Maker will do the right thing by the horse, and if he thinks the horse might dirt, I mean, why not, right? If you have the points to get in, maybe you try it. But I would assume, especially in a year where it's quite possible that the Belmont Derby will be held before the Kentucky Derby, that his next spot would be on turf. But we'll see. And you know, in Maker we trust as far as that stuff goes. Did you talk one more thing on CC before we move on there? Did you reach out to Michael McCarthy? Did you ask him what the next spot is going to be, or were you just, that was just all wishful thinking when you mentioned the Apple Blossom?
I actually missed him on Saturday evening. I texted him after the race, then he called me, but I was outside with Austin. I made him catch 100 footballs a day during in a row, no drops, in a row the entire spring break.
That's awesome.
And so we were right in the middle of his we were like 57, you know, and he'd already had dropped a few. He was having a rough day, and so I didn't answer, and then when I called him, I missed him. So I'll try to catch him this week sometime. And trust me, I'm going to call him and say, man, you know where you should go. I'm going to say, and think about what you did. You took City of Light there. Remember City of Light, man, at Oak Lawn? It's a great place, a great city. They got great pizza. You should take Cece to the Apple Blossom.
A little shout out to is it Tony's? Is Tony's the good pizza place, or is just Tony the name of the guy? DeLucas, yes, DeLucas. The guy is Tony. DeLucas is very good.
Yeah, you don't want to look. She's a grade one winner. You don't want to run her in a grade two. She's got a chance at an Eclipse Award. You got to run her in grade one. That's the conversation I'll have.
I'm okay with this little manipulation. For one thing, McCarthy's going to do what McCarthy's going to do, obviously. And for the second thing, even if you are being a little manipulative, after that ace move of not claiming victory in an unjust manner, I think you're allowed to try to grease the wheels a little bit here. Let's go to a question that we got in here, JK. This one came in from listener Nick. It says Nicholas. I think Nicholas Greathouse is a Nick, but I'm not sure. So we'll call him Nicholas. And he says, he just makes a suggestion about hearing some evergreen content regarding of things that affect the racing community. And then a couple specific questions. Do we know if the Derby would have insurance in case the event was canceled to cover losses? I have no idea, and I would almost think not. This is one of those black swan type events that I wouldn't think there would be any insurance for, and I almost don't know, you know, how big the number would be that could even cover losses on something like this. So my guess would be no. Any insight from you?
You know what? It's funny. We should do that thing where we pause in the show. Not now, but there's a person that we can text, and I think you know who I'm talking about, that will have the answer to that question. Or maybe you could shoot that person an email so we can give the answer before the end of the show. You know who I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Here's my thing is, from what I understand, talking to people that, you know, my brother's a musician. So he was supposed to play Coachella, and he was also playing, Ultra in Miami. And from what I understand, those types of events have, I don't know if both or some of them have insurance, right? I mean, they spend so much money on preparing for the event, marketing the event, down payments for this, down payments for that, renting equipment, all these things. They have to do something that if it doesn't happen, then, you know, they have to do something to cover some of those costs. Now, do they have insurance to cover their entire haul for the weekend? No. I just have a feeling a lot of their outlay is probably insured. That's my guess. If it's not the case, then I'm going to start a business when all this is over where I insure events like that. But I would think that they are insured just because of the outlay that those companies and corporations have to put forward in order to put the events on.
Well, I did send a quick email to our friend whose code name for the show will be Mr. Unitas. We'll see if Johnny U can get back to us with a bit of info on that. Nick goes on to ask, would losing the title as the longest continued running U.S. sports event mean anything? Would Naira and Stronach consider delaying the whole Triple Crown just one time? What's your take on those questions?
I mean, I don't think it you know, obviously it's a really cool thing to say. You know, when you're on an NBC broadcast, the longest running sporting event in the U.S., I don't think that it loses its lure because of that, because everyone knows why it was missed. It wasn't missed because the event just didn't go or
it didn't, would it really be missed if it ran at another point in the year? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think there's any magic to it, to tying in. There is magic to First Saturday in May. Obviously that would be, you'd be sacrificing something ephemeral if that didn't happen, but it still could be. I don't think you have to not consider it the longest continued running U.S. sporting event as long as it runs in the calendar year. I mean, that would be my take.
Yeah. My streak of 12 is not their streak of 140, whatever, but my streak mentally is not affected. If it doesn't happen this year, which I imagine it would happen later, it's going to happen. My brain's not going to be like, damn, got cheated. I'll still say 13. You know what I mean? I'll still say 12 next year and 13 or whatever. So, now as far as the other racetracks postponing their Triple Crown races, I mean, I would imagine that if the Derby can't run, then the Preakness can't run either. It's 2 weeks later, right? So I would think that the Preakness would feel the need to postpone as well. But at the same time, I could see, you know, maybe the Preakness will be run at Laurel. We just didn't see it coming this year.
Oh, my goodness. That's kind of an insane idea. I wonder, if, you know, normally when the question is, will these racetracks cooperate, one having been around for a little while, the knee-jerk reaction is no, they won't cooperate. But then I think it probably depends on the specifics of the timing. I mean, there's a world in which they could all do this together in a way that would work for the greater good, especially if the curve of this disease gets dampened significantly, that it looks like there could be some return to normalcy by June. I mean, couldn't you?
Yeah, but you know what, though? I think I think on the show you weren't on, that like, I just kind of believe in humanity. And you saw people get along tremendously when 9/11 happened. People that typically hated each other, there was this sense of unity like never before. I would imagine, obviously, this is a little bit different. You know, we're not being threatened by individuals or a group of people. We're being threatened as entire people, not Americans, Italians, French, Chinese, everyone. I would imagine that all of that BS that we see in this sport that prevents people, because there's no pie, right? We all talk about making the pie bigger. We're talking about no pie. I would think that people would come to their senses and cooperate so we could at least get a pie on the table and we'll figure out the rest of that crap later, I would think. But, you know, I'm never shocked.
First Saturday, and just run through a thought experiment. If the, like we say, we flatten this curve and you could have public events by June. I mean, sounds optimistic saying it out loud, but, you know, maybe that's the length of the winter that we talked about, Michael Osterholm talking about. So it's not, it doesn't seem crazy naive. First Saturday in June, Derby, and you keep the schedule thereafter. You end up running the Belmont Stakes as part of the Stars and Stripes Festival. I mean,
yeah, the problem
doesn't sound crazy.
Okay, so the meets move, right? So part of the thing with, like, if you move the Derby until like June and then you move the Preakness, well, Pimlico's closed,
Pimlico's basically, though, only open to run the Preakness. So what really does it matter if that the 2 weeks it's open get moved to, you know, you shuffle some stuff? And it doesn't seem crazy to me because it's not like,
no, it's not crazy.
Pimlico's open for one reason, and it's this. So running
the Belmont, what if they run a Belmont at Saratoga? That'd be kind of cool.
I'd like to see it be the last thing. I'd love to see a Belmont Racing Festival a Belmont Racing Festival right before Saratoga would be cool, because
how fun would that day be, right? Met Mile, Belmont Derby, Belmont Oaks, Woody Stevens, just a game. That'd be a heck of a card in July on the 4th of July weekend.
It could be insane. It could be insane. And I mean, we've talked about this, Paul Matisse, we've got to have on soon. I mean, his Twitter has been so interesting. I mean, between his reaction to the indictments, which we'll get to in a minute, I know a lot of people did ask me about, you know, there were some indictment-related questions based on a show that we recorded 3 years ago, which I'm still shaking my head about, by the way. But anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. But between his stuff on that and then also this idea of trying, this idea of, you know, it's the old crisis opportunity thing, trying to take this time and think about a racing calendar that makes more sense, whether that means smaller tracks running earlier in the week, not where every graded race takes place in this narrow band of window on a Saturday, but also even for a track like Belmont, the idea that it might be financially beneficial to have it be more of a festival mentality where you have these days that are just loaded and everybody drops everything and pays attention to. And we do something about, I mean, let's face it, the quality of racing at Belmont last year from the end of the Belmont Stakes Festival, excluding Stars and Stripes weekend, between Belmont and the beginning of Saratoga, I mean, it's lacking. And there's probably a way to reorganize it where it could be a lot more meaningful and create must-see TV for horse players around the nation. And it's something, I know Paul's bandied this about. I've heard Pat Cummings talk about it as well. It's something that I'd love to explore more on this show. What are your feelings about that model, JK, if we could somehow move to more of a festival model, almost combining the UK approach to racing with what we already have here in the USA and trying to take the most successful elements of both?
Yeah, I mean, great. Imagine this week if we could have six races from Aqueduct today, and then six races from Santa, and then tomorrow six races from Oaklawn, and six races. You know, we just kind of, you know, we spread it out and give people some entertainment when nothing else exists. You know, I do think that it's a great idea to have Paul on, and hopefully this week, because every time I call Paul, I know for sure I'm talking to him for an hour. No matter what we're calling, I can call and be like, "Hey, Paul, what time are we going to whatever tomorrow?" And he'll say 4 o'clock, and then he'll be like, "Hey, I wanted to ask you this," and then I'll say, "I wanted to talk to you about this," and the next thing you know, it's an hour.
Yeah,
his brain works in an amazing way where he's thinking about all of these different situations and conversations, and I think he'd be really interesting to have on here for, you know, really kind of cool creative ideas, just to get our brains moving and to kind of have some fun and dream a little bit in this time where we could use some distraction.
It's funny because we've had this vision. I don't think I'm letting any cats out of any bags here that are inappropriate, but we've had this vision of, I don't know if it's not really a spinoff of this show, but just to have episodes of this show. We talked about Joe Rogan on the last show where we sort of let you be Joe Rogan, right? We let you have these lengthy one-on-one conversations that span from here to there and back again and can go as long as you want them to go. And there's a logic to having you do one of those with Paul to sort of kick the tires on the idea and get it going. But I'm not sure I'm going to allow it to happen, JK, because I'd feel too left out if I wasn't on the call. But you could probably twist my arm, and we might be able to do that for a show coming up if you like that idea.
I'm not nearly as muscular or bald as Joe Rogan, but I do think that would be interesting. I think it'd be fun, and maybe this is a good time to do it, to debut it. But I think it'd be fun to have a long-form show on with people that are prominent in racing with lots to talk about from a racing standpoint, but also to just kind of have these conversations where you get to know people and talk to them about other things and get to know more about their personality. Not so much, you know, tell me about the best horse you ever trained or not so much that, but
I like that stuff, to be fair.
What are you? Yeah, of course. No, of course. But it's something we've all heard, right? If say we were to do a long form with Baffert, everyone can answer that question for him. He's going to mention Arrogate. He's going to mention Justify. He's going to mention American Pharoah. And he's probably not going to pick. If he picks one, he'll pick Pharoah because he was his first Triple Crown winner. We already know the answer. So it's like, I want to know what Baffert's doing all week. I mean, what are you doing at the house? Are you playing Monopoly? What's going on with the Baffert house? What are you guys doing over there?
I see him as a top hat guy, by the way. Maybe the Terrier, but I think I'm leaning top hat for that.
Absolutely. I always pick the iron, by the way. What's your piece?
I like the little doggy. And if it's not the little doggy, it's the top hat. I mentioned my two favorites.
So predictable.
Yeah, I suppose.
Are you a trader? Do you trade or do you just sit there and hoard everything, and like you're the reason the game's 4 hours long.
These days, nobody wants to admit to being a hoarder, JK. That's how you got. That's how you get yourself canceled in the pandemic. But no, you got to trade. That's the fun. That's the fun of it. We actually really like. I'm a big fan of these new versions of board games that have sort of rapid versions. This is playing board games with an 8-year-old too. It helps. And so we like the Millionaire's Monopoly that they have at Pint-Sized in Saratoga. Did you play that with us one day, actually?
Yeah. Wait. No? What's that?
It's great. They have it at Pint-Sized in Saratoga, and it's just a version where you play till you get to $1 million, and so it totally changes the strategy. It's not traditional Monopoly, but anyway, you can play a whole game in 34 minutes or so. It's good.
How do you get to a million in 34 minutes?
Well, they give the money's all different. You know, you start out with whatever you start out with, 200,000 or whatever. It's a simplified version. And I'm all about these simplified board games. We have a simplified version of Ticket to Ride that we've been playing. I think that board is going to get a workout in the next couple months. But anyway, enough about board games. I did have one more tangent I wanted to go onto off of the tangent, but my brain has lost it. And we do have one more topic we want to discuss on this week's show, and that is a show we did 3 years ago-ish about... it wasn't a show about Jorge Navarro, but it was a show on which Jorge Navarro came up. And I guess apparently you defended him. I think I recall defending him and questioning him at the same time. I'll get to that in a minute. But what? How did this come to light, and why are we even talking about this?
Well, first of all, the dude's an idiot. I mean, you know how many shows he had to go through to find that? I mean, dude. Love your family. You probably do something.
You think that guy has a family?
Well, he probably did at one point. That's look, here's the deal. Okay. First of all, this kind of reminded me, and by no means am I comparing myself to this person, but it reminds me of like the whole Kevin Hart thing where he said something derogatory 4 or 5 years ago, and then he apologized for it then. He apologized for it like subsequently. And then when he got the Oscars job, people were outraged and wanted him to apologize again. And he refused. Like, dude, I already apologized. Like, why? And then if you look at his Twitter feed and his stand up and all that other stuff, the 5 years after that, he never said the same thing again. So we want people to do right. But if they did wrong and then they changed to right, like, we're not accepting that. It's just bizarre to me. So I kind of felt the same way. It's like, dude, I said something 3 years ago in a podcast that was kind of dumb.
Did you re-listen?
In hindsight.
Did you re-listen?
Yeah, I listened to that one part.
Okay.
In hindsight, it was kind of dumb. In hindsight, right? But in the moment, I was simply saying that someone who I respect immensely did not feel that the treatment that Jorge Navarro was receiving at the time was fair. And he had personal experience as to why that wasn't the case. I was strictly like telling that story. I wasn't saying that that guy was right. I was saying that that's what I had heard. And I still, to this day, at that point, believed that if what he was doing on the racetrack deserved accusations, and if his behavior suggested that he was cheating, it was about a 7 or an 8 at that time on a scale of 1 to 10 of how likely it was that he was doing it. All I was saying was, and I still kind of stand by this, is that there's a lot of guys that didn't look like him, that didn't have his first name or his last name, that were doing just as much, that were not being treated as aggressively as he was. Now, it turns out that he was being treated that way because he was cheating his tail off, and he deserved it. But that's 3 years later with a whole lot more information. Dude, 3 years ago, I also liked McCracken in the Derby, and I wasn't right about that. the sight of a text message from my ex-wife didn't make me want to throw up. It does now. Like, stuff changes. You know what I mean? Like, give me a break. For crying out loud, like, I said something 3 years ago. And then the funny part is, like, all these people that follow me, like, liking. I was like, 12 people liked it, right? It's just, like, it's just so dumb. And so... I thought about responding, but better
to respond on the podcast.
Yeah, because if I can control it, right? It's not like 180 characters or whatever it is. And then it's like, and then if I respond to it, then like everyone who follows me sees it. Yes. When he's got like 180 followers and most of them are probably like, you know, Russian bots, like, you know what I mean? Like, why
his own burner accounts, maybe? I don't know. I can't imagine who would follow that guy. So I just assume they're fake.
It is, right? I mean, for crying out loud, I made syringe emoji jokes about cheaters.
Him specifically. I don't remember you making the syringe about anybody but him, honestly.
Yeah, the funny thing is, even then I knew he was cheating. I was simply suggesting that the negative attention he was getting, I thought was more than the evidence would suggest he should get. And I felt like part of that had something to do with race. I was wrong. Like, whatever.
Honestly, I don't think you were wrong. I feel like back then, especially, and even to now, you know, again, put what we know now aside. There are people, granted, there are two people who I feel like would be the head of the list of that anybody would have accused. So I mean, maybe this is a good comparison with especially 3 years ago. I feel like some of the service stuff became much more, I mean, I guess it was kind of always obvious, but I feel like it became more obvious in the last couple of years that maybe there was something funny. I don't know. Maybe that's wrong, but back then, 3 years ago, I think you had a lot more people comfortable in public saying that they were sure Navarro was outside the law than service. And I think that there's other trainers, too, who, you know, and we're not going to get into baseless speculation on here because that's not, that's, you know, we'll repeat a little racetrack gossip from time to time, but baseless speculation is something else. And that we're just not going to participate in. It's just not fair and it's not smart and we're not going to do it. And that's that. But there's other people that, to me, have just as supernatural ability that it doesn't even get questioned. And meanwhile, everybody's so comfortable just saying, oh, Navarro does this, Navarro does that. I think the fact that he was a Latin man, a Latinx man, absolutely was part of why people felt more comfortable saying that then. At the same time, on that same show, I said to his detractors, to his defenders, I said, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. So, you know, we created as complete a picture of a complicated situation. It is not our job as podcast hosts to be the judge and jury of these things. Has our sport let us down by not doing more of this and allowing this baseless speculation to flourish for as long as it has been? And sometimes very based speculation, of course the sports let us down in that regard. But that's not, again, it's not the idea that podcast hosts are now supposed to be the judge and jury of who's cheating and who's not and making, you know, compiling a list and talking about it. That's not our job, and I'm not interested in it. And if you think that makes me a shill, you know, call me a shill.
And here's the thing, right? So our partners, like, I don't think that if I were to come on the air and say, Jorge Navarro's a cheater, I don't even know which one of our partners would care.
Before all this came out, you're saying?
Yeah, before. I don't know who would have been like, hey guys, you can't do that. I don't even know who would have said anything. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Oh. It's my own sense of fairness. The reason I commented on it was my own sense of fairness.
It's un-American, dude. That's what makes our country so great. You know, that's what it's allowed. That's what makes our country great, is like, we don't, you're innocent until proven guilty. And we have a gosh darn good legal system and court system and justice system to help determine that. Is it perfect? Obviously not. There's a lot of issues, but I'm just saying, like, and it's not my job. I don't even have all the information. And that's what I've had conversations with friends about. It's like, dude, just cause you're winning at 28% or 28% or 34% off the claim, like, that ain't guilty, man. Like, it sure is red flag, and it sure is, you know, you better get you a burner phone, right? But it's not guilty. It's just not, especially, you know, in certain situations, and you don't know what's going on. And it's I'm not going to scream at the top of my lungs, someone's a cheater because he's winning at 28%.
I've heard trainers, and I know I've heard trainers who I know are not guilty tarred with brushes too. You know, when they go on a hot streak for whatever reason, and you'll hear people that I you know, been around enough that I would really fight to defend their honor, not say, hey, maybe this is a little bit, you know, I'm absolutely good with holding two thoughts in your head. Yes, maybe this is a little bit racist, but yeah, there's something that doesn't add up here. I can hold those two thoughts in my head. I've also been in situations where there are people I know are clean and people are saying that stuff. So it's very complicated, and again, it's not our job.
Especially in a game where the default answer in a lot of situations for a phenomenal performance is the dismissive response is juice. If a horse improves off the claim, the default answer is juice. And if your opinion was bad and a horse beat you, it was juice.
A lot of people, that's the default answer.
Now, look, and I would say 50% of the time, you're probably right, right? But it's just lazy to publicly stone someone just because of those situations. You got to have more information. What we saw last Monday, there's no question in my mind that those dudes are cheating. I thought it before, but I didn't know it. Now I know it.
Yeah, it's technically still innocent until proven guilty, but you read through that indictment and you do not, and I still always want to put the asterisk if this is proved to be accurate, but when you read the indictment, it leaves little room for doubt, let's put it that way. But even now, I'd still, you know, technically, you're supposed to put that proviso in there, but it when something is 95% certain, you start, like, you feel like you can start talking about it in some more absolutes.
Right, and like I'm saying, I'm not saying that they absolutely are. In the real world, I'm saying in my brain, it feels like they are, which I think is completely different.
Let's use this as a jump off to talk about what's supposed to happen in terms of enforcement. I've read some smart things that then fall down because they at the end come to, oh, and this is why we need testing. I mean, come on. If this hasn't shown how useless testing is, I don't know what can. So it just makes me wonder what the actual answers are. I do think testing needs to be part of it because unfortunately for, I hate to say it, but, and, you know, again, we sort of have a little bit of a different tone on the show the last few shows. So I'm just going to be totally honest and say things that I might have thought twice about before. You need it for show, you know, not, you can't not have strenuous testing because of what that would appear to the public, but clearly that's not enough. And as Craig Burnick did a great job, you did an excellent job on that In the Ring Without Me last week, by the way. And Burnick made the great point that what testing has done, as much as anything, seems to be casting a cloud over trainers that we know are to play by the rules. So the way the testing is working now, like that needs to be blown up and started again. But even that isn't going to be enough. What else can be done?
Well, I agree and I kind of disagree.
Okay,
I mean,
let's start there.
Yeah, okay. Testing the way we're testing is not going to solve any problems. The problem is that what we don't test for HGH and a lot of these other things that were allegedly being used, right? So if we're going to have a testing system, yeah, it does nothing. Now, if everyone from all the jurisdictions, Stronach, Churchill, Del Mar, Keeneland, Naira, if they want to chip in, put in some money to do a real proper, you know, USDA, I'm maybe using the wrong alphabets. I don't even care, whatever, like
USADA,
Olympic
Anti-Doping USADA. Association.
Yep. Right. Olympic style testing, what they use in the Tour de France now, they use in the Olympics, they use in boxing, and they use in MMA, they use in the NFL. If we're not going to do like the real testing, then we're just wasting time. We have to step our game up. And I think if we step our game up and we test more thoroughly, then that's different, you know. Okay. In the indictment, someone said in there, they don't even test for this in America. That's the thing. If we can test for this, quote unquote, this in America, then we're going down a path that the testing does help. The testing as it is now, I don't think is going to really move the needle.
I just worry, no pun intended. I just worry that, and I think we see this even with the USADA and the testing in other sports, that the cheaters will always be ahead of the testers. So I don't disagree. Real testing of the way that you're describing, I still believe it will help. I still believe that its main way that it'll help is an optics thing. And I think that this situation also tells us that tracks need to get serious about, either surveillance, and then this next part is something we'll have to ask Real Horsemen about, because it's just something I've seen speculated about, but the idea of having some sort of centralized pharmacy and eliminating the ability, as was written about in that great Gary Young piece from more than 20 years ago, the idea that there's just, you know, certain vets who have the black bag, and to find a way to eliminate that, whether it's centralized dispensation of drugs and anything else is considered highly illegal to deter cheating, and or surveillance of people who are suspected of nefarious behavior. I think all these options have to be on the table. What do you think about that?
No, I mean, I think it makes sense. I mean, you got to do something, you know, and I think it's got to be better than the police car and the, in the middle of the highway. I mean, we've talked about that, and that's worked, you know, for certain and other aspects of the game, whether, you know, whether it's the contest or whatever, but I think the waters are a little bit deeper for the performance enhancing aspect of it.
Did you note the date of the indictment? Will you be running studies in Stats Race Lens in a couple of weeks of trainers? If you were to make that list that we're not going to speculate about too much of who 10 people you think might not be playing by the rules are, will you go in a couple of weeks' time, maybe even just a week now, and run certain trainers through there and see if there's any kind of change in the results after these indictments went down?
I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, I played a wager this weekend where I was curious. There's someone I wasn't sure about. And so I checked to see how they were running, and they were running fine. So,
So you're already doing that type of thing that you're already, because I think it's a smart way to look at the world, frankly.
But here's the thing, though. It's not black and white, right? I mean, it's not like, is it one of those things where, like, you know, is the substances that were being used, are they still in the system? Are they long-term situations? I mean, if they stopped doing it, if they were doing whatever they were doing last Sunday, they did it. Is their performance this Sunday going to be affected if they didn't do it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what we're talking about and, like, what it actually, how it impacts. So
I think different drugs would be different. I mean, I think it would just depend, right? I mean, I think something.
Which is another reason why I just don't really think that it's going to lead to a whole lot of black and white, clear discoveries.
No, but I think there might be some signal in it, honestly. And I think that it wouldn't surprise me if you see a demarcation. Now, granted, if my really cynical view is right about the bad guys being ahead of the good guys, maybe it could tick back up at a moment's notice without anybody realizing.
Here's my fear is if you look at a guy or a gal and you look at their last week, okay, the indictment happened on Monday. So you're going to look at their runners Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and say they went 0-7 or whatever it is, you're going to be like, ding, 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 ding.
No, I'd look. The next step would be, now let's look at the prices these horses are. And if four of them were favorites, I would be like, we're probably onto something here. Maybe this is a trainer I'm going to look to fade for a little while.
The next step I would do is I would pull up all the races that trainer had in the last year on Stats Race Lens. And I would find I would try to find as many other weak spans of 0-7. And I would try to find other weak spans. And if the guy's gone 0-7 five or six times in the last year in a weak span, then you got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, again, to me, if you were looking at a lot of favorites and you have an event, you know, like that indictment, I mean, I mean, you got nothing legally, but I mean, we're talking about betting in parimutuel markets, and that would be more than enough for me to fade some horses. That's all I'm saying. Just giving some folks some ideas of ways they can play with their Stats Race Lens and look. I mean, look, there could be a lot of gray. There could be a lot of noise as opposed to signal, but wouldn't surprise me one bit if, especially given another week, if you might be able to find some signal. I'm very surprised you're resistant to the idea. I thought you'd love it.
No, I mean, I like the idea. I like the exercise. But the problem is that this entire situation, 3 years ago, what I said, how I feel now, the conversations and arguments I've had with friends, it is not as black and white as it appears. There are so many variables, and I just want to be responsible when I'm accusing someone of being something terrible. That's all. I just want to be responsible about it. I want to have a lot of information before I'm not going to just look
I'm not saying I'm going to. You're not going to take that seven race sample and be talking on the podcast about how so-and-so is clearly a cheater because of this. I was just trying to give some people some betting advice potentially.
Right. No, but the moment that you, here's the thing though, right? The moment that you fade that guy who was 0-7 last week, he's going to run off the screen on you next week on Thursday and beat you out of your pick five. I take the information in and process it, right? But I would just tread lightly when making final decisions based on a small sample, or even worse, not that you're doing this, but coming to a conclusion about someone's character off of the small sample.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't do. I mean, that would be completely crazy. And from a wagering point of view, you could prove right. But again, I think it's a question of just because somebody was taking an edge doesn't mean that one of their horses can't just have so much in hand that they could win anyway. And you know, you don't want to be foolish about it, but I don't know. It's just a way that I feel like, especially until the system gets addressed and hopefully corrected, that date is one that if you're a statistically oriented player, I would keep in mind going forward. And it might be short lived. I mean, if you want to be so cynical to say there might until it gets addressed, there might be other ways of getting whatever these substances are. Who knows? It's extremely complicated. It's not fun. And I still hope that the note of optimism, I mean, it felt like every industry leader's quote we read was the same. And it was very similar to what we said, that we hope this ends up being the sea change, but it's not going to happen magically. There's going to have to be more action taken by folks within the industry, and we'll see. It's an ongoing story that we'll be following. I have nothing else on this. You got anything else about anything, or are you about ready to wrap today?
No, I think that's about it. And that's about it. Yeah, I can't think of anything.
All right, there you go. We will bring this show to an end. I want to thank you, JK, for all your contributions. Thank everybody for tuning in and listening, especially folks who responded and gave us feedback about what you're looking for from this show. We really appreciate that. We'll thank our partners, Stats Racelands, 10 Strike Racing, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. We really appreciate the folks who send their donations into them, trfinc.org/players there. As far as Stats Racelands goes, you do get discounts on any of their unlimited packages, whether that's weekly, monthly, or annual. Go ahead and use our promo code there, STATSITM. And that's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media and the Money Media's business managers, Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.